Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and a new documentary opens in New York today about the U.S. economy and the shrinking middle class. But it's getting good notices for making the subject anything but dry or haranguing. I'm joined now by the star of the movie, Robert Reich. Yes, that Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor in the Clinton administration, now a professor at UC Berkeley, and by the director of the film, Jacob Kornbluth. Inequality for All will be showing at Lincoln Plaza and Angelica Cinemas. Welcome back, Professor Reich, and welcome to WNYC, Jacob Kornbluth.
Well, good morning, Brian.
Thanks, Brian.
And so your basic premise, and we'll play a clip from the film in a minute, is that the widening gap between rich and poor isn't just bad for the poor, it's bad for everybody, Professor Reich?
Yes. The problem we get into, Brian, is that when we talk about widening inequality, a lot of people say, well, my view is this about fairness, my view is this about fairness, or I'm blaming the rich, or I'm blaming the poor, or I'm blaming government. There's a lot of blame game, a lot of personal, subjective attitude. That's understandable. But what we set out to do in this film is to explain that inequality right now has got to the point where it is threatening the entire economy. One of the reasons that the economy is having such a hard time getting out of the gravitational pull of the Great Recession is that almost all the gains have been going to the top 1%, which means the vast middle class and everybody who wants to join the middle class, they just don't have enough purchasing power to keep the economy going. This is going to and continues to make the economy very, very fragile.
So here is a clip from the movie Inequality for All. This is 30 seconds in which Robert Reich explains how big that gap is getting.
The typical male worker in 1978 was making around $48,000, adjusted for inflation, while the average person in the top 1% earned $390,000. Now fast forward. By 2010, the typical male worker earned even less than he did then, but the person at the top got more than twice as much as before.
So, director Jacob Kornbluth, you use a lot of archival footage, music, as we heard there, to make it entertaining, sound effects, and data visualization to display and make the statistics sing visually, in effect. Was that mostly your role as director?
Well, I think my role as director was to figure out what the story is and figure out how to present Professor Reich's argument. I mean, to me, this widening income inequality is the biggest story of our times because it affects each one of us in every aspect of our lives every day. And I think from my perspective, a lot of times people aren't engaged in they hear these headlines about income inequality, but they don't really kind of understand the meaning or what this income inequality really means to them. They hear the headlines of 99% and 1%, but they don't really understand exactly why it affects them regardless of where they are on the income ladder. So I had to sort of really own that argument myself before I could present Reich's argument for the film. So I think it was certainly like me understanding the argument, and then, of course, it was figuring out the best way to present it visually. And I think the big challenge for this film is to get beyond sort of people's basic understanding and really present this in a way that everybody can understand. I mean, my wife's a school teacher, and she doesn't usually like economics or politics, and she loves this movie because for the first time in her life, she feels like she gets it. And I think a lot of people who watch this film have had that experience.
So, listeners, if you want to talk to Robert Reich or Jacob Kornbluth today, even before seeing this film, which only opens today, you may have a thing or two you want to have asked Robert Reich and never had the opportunity, or Jacob Kornbluth, 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And one of the other data visualizations you use, Jacob, is a picture of a suspension bridge overlaid onto economic statistics that show two towers, one in 1928 and one in 2007, after the Depression. So, you know, people can imagine, like, the Whitestone or Throgs Neck Bridge or something with those two towers that come up as you're driving across. Where are we on that curve now?
Well, that's an interesting question. I grew up in Washington Heights, right across the George Washington Bridge, and that was the bridge I had in my mind. It was one of the first real aha moments for the movie for me because, as you said, the stanchions are 1928 and 2007. They're the peaks of income inequality, and everything in the middle looks like sort of the middle of a suspension bridge. And you see that when these two peak years, after each one of these two peak years, we've had the two greatest crashes of the last century. So it connects in your mind the sense that when widening income inequality is greatest, our economy is threatened by these crashes. And when we made the film, the peak year most recent was 2007, just before the Great Recession. And as it turns out, new data just came out about 2012, and it's actually since the crash, I believe 95% of the gains have gone to the top 1%. The problem is actually getting worse rather than better in terms of income inequality. And if we look at history and if we see this movie, I think that that's scary for where our economy is heading and where we go from here.
And so, Professor Rice, you make the point that the economy is rules, and you want to come out of this with people, you know, in the shrinking middle class to advocate for changes to the rules that would fix these extremes. You want to go through some of those?
Brian, the movie is not didactic, and I think it's very important that people understand it's not an eat-your-spinach movie. I mean, Jake has created a very entertaining movie. People tell me that they've laughed and they've cried and they've had a very, they love the movie. It doesn't get into telling people what is the answer. There's no magic bullet. Personally, I do feel that the minimum wage has got to be a living wage. You know, we've got to raise the minimum wage. We've got to have tax reform so that people at the top are really paying much more than they are paying right now because they've got so many tax deductions and tax loopholes they put in because they have so much economic power that they actually are not paying very much. We've got to make sure that the Glass-Steagall Act, which used to separate investment banking from commercial banking, is resurrected and limit the size of the big banks, because otherwise we're going to have a repeat of the almost meltdown of Wall Street that devastated a lot of the middle class and hurt a lot of the poor. And we could go on and on. I mean, I think education is critically important. We're not going to see these changes, obviously, in this Congress. I mean, we'll be lucky if we get through the next several weeks without a government shutdown or without a major default on our nation's obligations to pay our creditors. But I do think that we're on the brink of something very new and different. Look at the New York mayoral race. Bill de Blasio is talking about these issues. It's also happening around the country. Striking workers in big box retailers, Walmart, also McDonald's workers. A lot of people are beginning to sense that we are at a tipping point, and that unless we, being average people out there, not politicians, unless we take some control in organizing and mobilizing and energizing this country for a movement to really take back the economy and make our democracy work, then we're going to be in deeper trouble.
Since you mentioned de Blasio, you know, he was on the program just shortly before you this morning, and with him running for mayor on exactly this theme, I wonder how much you think a mayor can change regarding inequality without the national reforms that you just articulated.
Well, a mayor can do something. I mean, raising taxes on people, over $500,000 in income, and using that money to improve public education makes a huge amount of sense. Mayors should be doing this in other cities around the country. Minimum wages can be higher in certain cities and in certain states than the federal minimum wage. There's a limit, Brian. I mean, obviously, we need federal changes in a lot of the rules of the game. But it's encouraging to me that particular candidates, particular mayors, particularly states are really leading the way.
Terry, in Cortland Manor, you're on WNYC with Robert Reich and Jacob Kornbluth. Hi.
Hi, good morning. I do very much get what you're saying. The inequality gap concerns me greatly. I have been signing petitions to Walmart, to McDonald's, writing letters to Congress people. If I had the money, I would be donating it to try to get rid of a lot of these Tea Party Republicans in Congress. I don't have the money. I would be interested to find out if you have suggestions and what else I could be doing.
Carrie, there are many things you can be doing. In fact, if you write this down, inequalityforall.com. That's a website we put together, and for people who see the movie, but even if you don't see the movie, go to the website, because we have designed it for people like you who say, look, I don't have the money to contribute like some of the fat cats, but I do want to get involved, and I want to change the direction because I care about what's happening to this country, and I don't, I'm worried, frankly, for the future and for my kids. So inequalityforall, one word, .com.
And if I could add to that, I just on a personal level, I'd like to imagine me 3 years ago. This is my first documentary. I had never made a documentary and hadn't felt politically engaged and felt a little bit disempowered, like I couldn't really do anything, despite the fact that I was worried about this problem. But sort of bit by bit, I sort of decided I had had enough, and then I decided I had to take. I'm a filmmaker, so maybe I should make a film, and. You know, the result of it is my first sort of act of doing anything political 3 years later is a film that's now coming out all over the country today and hopefully has a chance to contribute to the discussion. So I would just say I talk to people all the time who are frustrated on a personal level that they don't feel they can do anything, but it really is that first step. You know, right, the thing right in front of your face. If you're a teacher, you can do something as a teacher. If you're unemployed, you can do something. You know, just as well. And if you're a small business owner or, you know, anything, there's always a way that you can take some step based on who you are to do something about this issue.
Jacob Kornbluth, director of the new movie Inequality for All, which opens today in New York, featuring our other guest, Robert Reich, the former Secretary of Labor, now UC Berkeley professor. So on this exhorting people to feel hopeful and do things if they can do them to make a difference. Professor Reich, why do you think more people who are affected don't share your politics? You know, this is sort of the what's the matter with Kansas question. Why so many people in so many parts of the country who are exactly the ones who are being disadvantaged in many cases by the status quo, they think you're on the wrong side in many cases. Why don't they get it?
Well, they do get it. I mean, you know, as I go around the country, Brian, people in many so-called red states are just as upset about the direction of the country. I mean, they have been conditioned by a lot of big lies that are telling them over and over again that trickle-down economics works, that you've got to lower taxes on the wealthy in order to create jobs. But they're beginning to understand that that's a lie. It can't possibly work. The rich are getting richer and richer and richer, and nothing is trickling down. That's why I'm optimistic about us getting to a tipping point, because so many Americans are feeling that the game is rigged against them, which is bad, but in another sense, it's good, because that's the beginning of major political change.
Evan in Manhattan, you're on WNYC with Robert Reich and Jacob Kornbluth. Hi.
Yes, thank you. I just want to know about our trade policy from Mr. Reich, if he thinks that that's an additional factor causing this imbalance, and an imbalance in terms of the forces of labor versus capital, et cetera, et cetera. You know,
I do, Evan. I think it's two fundamental things. One is globalization, including our trade policies, and the second is technological change, our labor displacing technologies, which even if we did not have globalization, would be taking a big toll on a lot of workers, particularly manufacturing workers and others. But that doesn't mean we have to be kind of economic determinists. And one of the themes of the movie is that other nations facing the same forces of globalization and technological change have not suffered the same wide inequality, wild disparities that we are suffering, where 95% of the gains since the recession are going to the top 1%, where, in fact, opportunity, equal opportunity, is a fading ideal. We don't have to settle for that.
But you are for free trade, so-called, essentially, aren't you?
I'm for free trade, but I'll tell you something, Brian. I think that our trade treaties, and this includes NAFTA. I mean, when I was in the administration, I was very strongly pressing the administration, not very successfully, I'm afraid, to put stronger labor side agreements and also environmental agreements into those trade agreements so that, for example, every nation we're trading with would have to have a minimum wage that was half its average wage. That's something we ought to have as well.
Iman in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Hello, Iman.
Hi there, Brian. What I wanted to say is I'm a preschool teacher in private schools, and it's just been getting harder and harder every year to survive. You know, it's I'm getting poorer and poorer every year. You know, I have no insurance. I'm a single mother. It's just so difficult, and I feel so helpless. And I know, I hear what you're saying. You know, there is something we can do. But I feel like it's almost impossible unless we organize. And yet, every time I turn on the news, it's so anti-union, so anti-labor, you know. And I guess I want to know what I can do as a person who's struggling to survive, because you can't be that politically active when you're struggling to put food on the table, when you're struggling to pay your bills.
Well, you're exactly right. I mean, the people who are most in need of different rules that are going to give them a fair break, that, you know, if they're working hard, they should not be afraid of being in poverty. They don't have a minute for politics. But there are a lot of other people, Yvonne, who do have some time. I mean, you know, who spend 3 hours or 4 hours watching the television every night. Well, turn off the television for an hour. Understand that you can be involved in politics. You need to be involved. We need to make this the most important grassroots movement in the country in terms of taking back our economy. And for people who don't have the time, you need to at least make sure that people around you understand what's at stake. That's why we did the movie. And Jake is a brilliant director and managed to do something that I, notwithstanding having written 13 books and for years trying through lectures and through every other means I have convey what's going on, I haven't been able to do it nearly as effectively as Jake has enabled me to do it through this movie.
Hey, Iman, can I ask you a quick question?
Sure.
Because I hear in your voice, obviously, how much you're personally struggling with this. Do you have any hope for your insurance situation because Obamacare is coming in? Are you looking forward to going on to the exchanges and seeing what's available to you, or not so much?
Well, actually, that's so interesting that you ask, because I just got something in the mail from State Senator Velmanette Montgomery saying I'm, you know, that they're inviting people to come and hear what the options are and what you can do. And I am a little hopeful, you know, but I don't know. You know, I think that the Republicans are trying to kill Obamacare, and it worries me. You know, it worries me.
It worries me, too. You know, they tried to kill in the 1930s, up until 1935, they tried to kill the idea of Social Security. They tried to kill, in 1965, Medicare. And they tried to kill those two acts of Congress because they were afraid that once people actually experience Social Security and then Medicare, people would be so it would make their lives so much better that Republicans would never be able to get rid of the programs, and that's, I think, what we're seeing again here. The scare tactics, the kind of vilification of the president and the Affordable Care Act, is almost exactly out of the same playbook that we saw in 1935 and 1965. The only difference is there's more money behind the anti-Affordable Care ads.
We're almost out of time. I do know, Robert Reich, that you're self-deprecating about many things in this movie. You've got a sense of humor to go along with your height, for example. I did ask Bill de Blasio earlier if he's ever been in a two-shot with you. Might take a wide-angle lens. And he said not that he knows of. But you say seriously in the film that something about growing up short made you want to stick up for the metaphorical little guy in an earnest sense in your grown-up life. Can you talk about that connection?
Well, you know, it's interesting, Brian. I never used to talk about this, and really Jake convinced me for the film that it was useful and important to kind of connect my own story, my life story, with my work and with this big issue. Just very briefly, yes, I'm very short, and I've always been very short, and I was even shorter as a kid. And when I was 3, 4, 5, 6, I was beat up by the bigger boys. I mean, bullying is not unusual. A lot of us were bullied, but I did something that I think helped me. I kind of made alliances with the older boys who were bigger and could protect me, kind of the original protection racket I had. But the experience of being bullied and the experience of feeling vulnerable might have had something to do with what I've devoted my life to. Because in economic terms, we have today a large and growing portion of America that's bullied economically, that is vulnerable in ways that we have never seen this many people vulnerable before. Even if they're called middle class, even if they have fairly good incomes, it could be that tomorrow or next year they lose a job. It could be that their spouse or partner loses a job. They're dependent on two incomes. It could be that something that they need or, in fact, a part of their spending has to, you know, like college costs getting out of control. These people, and again, we're talking about a majority of Americans, no longer have a government that is working for them. The government is too much in the hands of big money, big business, big corporations, Wall Street. These people no longer have trade unions. The trade union movement is a small fraction of what it used to be. And so that the bullying, the economic bullying and the vulnerability is palpable for a large and growing portion of America.
Robert Reich, who is the subject of the new movie Inequality for All by director Jacob Kornbluth, who has also been with us. It opens today at the Lincoln Plaza and Angelica Cinemas. Thank you both very much for coming on. Good luck with the film.
Thank you, Brian. Thanks for having us.